tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 467 of the Tsunami Escape Podcast. I'm C. Kohler, and with me tonight is Crocodile.
Evening.
And Seda.
Hello.
Well, let's go ahead and start off with the news like we normally do. I could only think of one thing. I saw this posted on Reddit. I know last week we talked about a bunch of the changes that were happening back at the end of the block in the rerun slots. And last time I said that Blue Exorcist Season 1 was coming to replace Daima on the 4th. But I saw a post on Reddit, and then I went and I checked the Adult Swim schedule today, and now it's not going to be Blue Exorcist. Instead, it's going to be Season 2 of My Adventures with Superman, specifically, for some reason, starting with Episode 2.
And this is from, I'm actually checking right now, this is from the Adult Swim schedule on their website.
Yeah, this isn't from like the Toonami Facebook thing.
Yeah.
So maybe it's wrong, but it's like that for, it's got the episode 2 on the 4th, and then the next following week, it's got the episode 3 of My Adventure with Superman. Sounds official.
Yep. Wait. I'm looking at the Adult Swim schedule for the 4th, and it has, oh, okay, sorry. They have like a My Adventures with Superman, and then My Adventures with Superman's also like later in the night.
Yeah, it happens later too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I saw that. I was like, wait, I'm confused.
It aired twice on the 4th?
Yeah, so here's the schedule according to Adult Swim's website for April 4th. Rooster Fighter, Dandadan, Blue Lock, Tokyo Avengers, One Piece, My Adventures with Superman, Ninja Kamui, Rooster Fighter, American Dad, My Adventures with Superman, My Adventures with Superman. So it's like,
oh, so that's airing like, beyond adults. I mean, Konami, that's airing like 5 in the morning or something. I've not done the math.
Yeah,
but
yep. But yeah, but I do see My Adventures with Superman is definitely on after One Piece. And the episode there is Adventures with My Girlfriend, which is that episode 2?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I see it.
Interesting. And what's playing at the outside Toonami? Is that 1 and 2, or what is?
It's Adventures of a Normal Man Part 1. Is that the very first episode?
Possibly, because I think then on the following week it's like, I forget.
Sorry, let me check real quick. But yeah, the episodes that are airing later in the night, like again outside of Toonami, yeah, it's called Adventures of a Normal Man. Let's see here.
That sounds like it might be Season 1, Episode 1.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, that's the first episode of the first season. So,
Oh, wait.
Yeah, yes, that's correct. Yes. And then what's also weird, too, is that, again, just to confirm, like, the rerun slot on Toonami is starting with Episode 2, and then the following week is Episode 3, which is Full Metal. Wait a minute.
Yeah, Full Metal Scientist is Season 2, Episode 3. So yeah, it starts at Episode 2, and then it goes to Episode 3.
Yeah. It's strange. Why such a random thing to just start on the second episode in a rerun slot? That's...
So my thinking, or like a potential cause for this schedule change, something that jumps to mind is perhaps we already know that Season 3 for Superman has been announced. So maybe this is a prelude, and that Season 3 is coming to Toonami sooner than we expected. But if each season is 10 episodes and we're starting at second, that would suggest in 9 weeks, maybe something happens with that show. But maybe. I don't think there's a slot opening up in 9 weeks because, let's see. Oh, wait. Rooster Fighter. That would be, what episode of Rooster Fighter is that? Would that line up? Because maybe in 9 weeks, Rooster Fighter ends and then that could slot in a new venture.
Maybe. Superman.
Because Dandadan would not be over. And of course, Blue Lock and Tokyo Avengers are going on for a long ass while. I'm wondering if, would that swap in for Rooster Fighter? Does that timing work out?
I'm not sure. I'd have to count. I don't want to waste time on the podcast. But C. Kohler mentioned this briefly. Like, this is not from the Toonami Facebook. So, like,
I would say this isn't like Toonami Facebook post is like official. This is Toonami, or this is the Adult Swim schedule on their website. But we've seen, like, literally just this week, that sometimes it changes. So this is not, who knows if this is what it actually will be. But it's what it says right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think maybe we're thinking too much about it. Let's see what happens in a couple weeks. But I think it's possible it might change, but who knows?
Well, it's certainly odd for that to be on any official site, even if it's not necessarily the Toonami one. So it's definitely something we need to, like, pay attention to. But I don't disagree that things could change or still in flux. But it's not and like usually, a rumor or just some rando online saying this. It's still
an official site. Their website. It's literally adultswim.com/schedule. You know, so it's like on their page. Now, usually in the past, I know their schedule, when they've had like placeholder like schedules, it's usually something like really random. That like makes no sense, like some episode of Dragon Ball Super or something. It wouldn't make sense, but when it said episode one of Blue Exorcist, you know, that wasn't quite so random. Like maybe it's that, but I guess not.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we've seen placeholders before on that schedule. But is My Adventures with Superman episode 2 and episode 3 a placeholder? Maybe it's, I don't know.
Random aside, I forgot that the 9th episode of the 2nd season is called Pierced Heaven Superman. It's just kind of funny how anime-coded this series is.
Yeah, they did a good job.
Oh, no, it's a good show, but I'm just kind of funny. Just anime Superman through and through.
Okie dokie. Well, like I said, that's the only thing I had noteworthy this week. So, with that out of the way, let's go ahead and talk about the block. We'll begin with Rooster Fighter. Rooster Fighter, Episode 2, The Caged Bird, which is the referring to this new character that's introduced in this episode, this little chick named Piyoko. I don't know if her name was actually ever said.
No, I don't think so, because I was watching the show and I was waiting for him to like give the name of the chick. But I don't remember it ever saying it.
I think it was just in the credits, right?
Oh, maybe.
Well, I was watching the closed captioned and it said that it would like give the name of the character that was speaking. So, okay. So the episode starts out right before the credits, the opening, which was a cut opening, by the way. It's just like a funny bit where we see some people down at the beach, like doing some stuff. And they find the sea urchin and Keiji's there. And he's like, what is this foul thing that they've given me? And he eats it. And it's like the most delicious thing he's ever eaten.
Yeah, it was like, the sea urchin and later in the episode, he wants more sea urchin.
And wasn't there also like a small child who was asked for sea urchin too? Or did I imagine that?
Well, that was later. There's later in the episode, they show Piyoko for a bit, and then they go back to like, they're at some restaurant, and some kid is eating sea urchin, and then KG's outside the window.
Yeah, I think
like,
the kid from the first episode who had weird tastes, I think, was that same kid. But
I didn't even pay attention if it was the same kid. For me, it was just a kid, and KG now has, you know, is now very fond of sea urchins.
He has the hunger, the yearning.
That was like the funniest like bit in the episode with him like plastered up against the the window, like drooling.
And the mom was like, "We can't eat with this savage beast out staring outside from you know through the window."
Yeah. So when we come back from the opening, we see that there is this man and he's selling little chicks at the just somewhere out in the open. The chicks are just in a box. And that's when we meet this new chick character we've seen in the opening, of course. Like I said, her name is Piyoko. Again, I only knew that because it was in the captions. But all the other chicks are giving her a hard time. She thinks that this guy that's selling them is great, and she keeps calling him Pops. Then we cut to like him back at his apartment watching TV. And he's like really big into like,
It's like a Yakuza movie.
Old samurai films, like about honor and justice and all the good stuff.
Yeah. Somebody in the thread said, is that Ken Takakura? And I'm like, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Anyway, she thinks he's cool. And he actually is kind of cool.
Yeah, when they first showed this character, I thought he was just kind of like pawning off like chicks, and maybe he was like not actually a caring person, and he just wanted the money, and he's just like selling them. But no, he actually seems to care for them.
He looks like a douchebag, so. But he's very much a heart of gold kind of Yakuza fellow. So
yeah, and we see that like he has the same tattoo on his back, and so forth. And he's like even gives the little chick her own little tattoo on her back with like marker. I don't even know. I forgot. I didn't write down what he wrote.
Duty.
Duty. Okay.
And he says the duty to basically fight the strong, protect the weak. This is what I just want for you, and you carry through as you live your life. So like, it was very like inspiring. Like again, he's like the best version of a Yakuza. You can
imagine.
Like he believes like legitimately in honor and. I guess justice, I mean, he probably does crimes on the side, or obviously the people he works for does crimes on the side, and we'll always go into that in a little more detail, but he himself is very much a good person.
Well, unfortunately, he's got bad friends, because this guy comes over and says that, I need you to help me out. If you help me out, I'll help you out, and this is another Yakuza guy.
He's like, I'm starting a business, and I need you to, like, you know, sign this just in case. I forget the exact reasoning, but there was a lot.
He needed a loan, and so he needed a guarantee on his loan. And so, obviously,
Yeah, but unfortunately, the guy had duped our friend Pops. And by the way, Pops' name, again, another name they only showed in the...
No, I actually did write that. I actually did write this down, Yesso. His friend actually mentioned it.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I think they come back from a meeting, and didn't he get, like, a Pops or Yesso or whatever get beaten up? He went to a meeting with the other Yakuza, right? And then he came back kind of beaten, right? And his friend was like, while he was tending to him, his friend then pulls up the I need a loan thing, right?
I forget the order exactly of what happens, but he gets tricked, he gets beat up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think he had to leave the chicks to go to a meeting, is I think my recollection, or maybe it was the next day. But I remember him coming back.
Owes the Yakuza a lot of money, and so... Yeah, he comes back, he's beat up, and that's when he talks with his friend. Then he learns later that a bunch of thugs break into his apartment, and they're there to beat on him or beat him down because this friend betrayed him, basically played him, and made him even more in trouble with the Yakuza.
They didn't really break into his house, they more kind of like entered, but been like, we're like loan sharks kind of thing. So
yeah, they aggressively entered.
Yeah, that's supposed to a break in, right.
But then this character, Yesso, first of all, he has like a, what he calls like a boil on his neck, but it's not.
Yeah.
This becomes.
Yeah. I can't remember. Did they ever show he got it?
They didn't show how he got it. He just has it.
I wasn't sure if I missed it. Cause I remember them showing that and that was obviously prelude to something, but I wasn't sure if I missed when he got it. I was like, did I miss? No, okay, just a second.
Yeah, so we're still not exactly sure. This is what turns him into a monster. We don't know like the mechanism of this yet exactly. Like, how did he get it? Was it just random? Who knows? But they show us like a small flashback of him as a child and like his mom, I guess, like abandoned him.
Yeah, she was a prostitute, and then, but not the whole time.
This isn't like a big flashback, but it's kind of just says like this guy has kind of been tricked, you know. Duped before, maybe something that happens often to him, and he's kind of like had it at this point, and this is what he basically turns into a monster. So,
yeah, I kind of got the impression that the whatever it is on the back of his neck was getting larger, and I think again, it's pretty clear that it's brought on by super powerful negative emotions, and that's probably the trigger mechanism. But how did it get there? I don't know. We'll find out later. I'm sure.
I'm assuming that'll be explained over time. Yeah, basically the thing on his neck kind of explodes into this like really colorful bodily fleshy thing that comes
like
out, and he becomes a monster.
Three animators are having a little fun or something.
Yeah.
CGI animators.
Yeah.
Breaks out and starts going crazy and starts destroying things, and that's when Keiji, that's when we saw the scene with Keiji at the window. He sees this monster and goes to fight the monster, and he's fighting the demon. He ends up defeating the demon.
But the whole time, Pyoko is like, no, don't fight him. He's good.
Yeah.
Don't kill Pops, because she still believes in him. Like, she understands that, like, she's worried about Pops. She doesn't understand what's happening, but it's clear bad shit is happening. She's worried about Pops, and she keeps trying to scream to him, stop, control yourself, go back to normal. But obviously, it falls on deaf ears. But yeah.
Exactly. Keiji just thinks she needs rescuing. And at first, he doesn't really seem to care too much, but he does. She gets kind of knocked away. He destroys this demon, Pops, but to I think, okay. my surprise, yeah, he actually survived. And he's even Keiji comments on this. He's like, every demon I fought until now has always been killed by my Screech, but this one, he may have maybe the soul inside of him was good or something because it survived. And then you see his body laying on the ground there.
He's definitely like atrophied, so like he's not okay. He's not like you see later. You see later he goes to the hospital because he's obviously like battered and injured and whatnot. He's not okay, but he's very much
dead,
alive.
Yeah.
And right before the commercial break, Pyoko had seen all this, and in a kind of a moment there, she kind of has like a crush on Keiji. She's like, "Oh my god, what's this feeling I'm having?" You know, kind of like first, like puppy love type thing.
That was actually the first moment I realized that Pyoko is a female. I wasn't sure of their sex or gender, but it was like that moment I was like, "Oh, okay, that's what's going on here." Because obviously she was very upset with Keiji because she thought Keiji killed her pops. But then once she realized that Keiji didn't, and she thought, "Oh, you were trying to save him, not kill him." And that's when she gets a whole flood of emotions. And at this point, she's trying to return to Pops, but Pops, I guess, somehow requires the ability to speak chicken and tells her to, like, no, like, go forth and don't worry about me, go follow your heart or whatnot. Somehow, he understands the situation, communicate with her. I'm not sure if that's ability he gained from being a monster or whatnot. Like, obviously, they talked earlier in the episode, but not in a way that they necessarily told him to suit each other, like how a person would speak to a dog or something, where there's obviously some understanding, but not full. But this circumstance, it feels like they could fully understand each other.
I don't think he understands her. That's not a thing. I think that's just him speaking to her, and she can hear him, but he can't hear her.
Not in the first part of the episode, but I thought, like, after he became a monster, it felt like they were actually more direct communication between them. That's what it felt like to me, that they could better understand each other somehow.
Seda, what do you think? Do you think he understood the chick?
You mean to Yasuo?
Yeah.
So at this moment, he kind of, like, mouths to her to, like, go with the rooster. But I don't know if maybe he understood, like, I don't know if he understood, like, you know, verbally what she was saying, but maybe he understood that she wanted to leave. And he was basically saying, giving her his blessing. Like, go for it. Like, go with him type of thing. Like a father almost, you know, live your life. But I don't know if he, like, actually understood her, like speaking. No.
I just felt that the manner of communication between them was a lot more direct in that circumstance, as if they couldn't understand each other, in contrast earlier in the episode where it was very much person speaking to dog kind of communication. But I don't know, maybe we could be wrong. Maybe they could reveal more about the monster relation process in future episodes. I'm not sure. But that's at least how I read it, that there was a distinct difference in how they could communicate with each other after that point.
So when we come back from the commercial break, Pyoko is kind of out on herself. She's kind of mad and upset about the situation she's in because she can't seem to find Keiji and other things. And she's also getting really hungry. She sees like a worm on the ground. And she can't bring herself to eat it because it's too gross. And that's when we then come across Keiji is fighting this other big monster. It's like a slug demon. Now, at first I thought it was like a leech demon, but it actually is a slug because it says slug all the time.
Yeah.
I think it had sharp teeth and like multiple eyes and whatnot. So I think maybe that's why I thought it might have been a leech, because it had some definitely not slug like characteristics.
Yeah, it definitely looked like it had leech heads coming off of it, but no, it's a slug monster of some kind. Who knows what it created that. But anyway, he's fighting that. He sees Pyoko nearby, and she's about to get attacked or hurt, and he ends up protecting her. He doesn't really want to, but he just is like, oh, because he kind of makes it pretty clear here that he doesn't care about kids. We actually saw that earlier when she was trying to follow him, and he was like, go away, kid, I don't, you're freaking brat, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but kind of, you know, like, he doesn't want her to get killed or hurt. Right. So, like, kind of almost like reluctantly is like, get out of the way, and he does save her, but he gets very injured in the process.
Right. It's not that he just protected her. He took basically, well, not a bullet, but he took a jaw bite for her, which would have been fatal for her, but rather just like severely injures Keijing.
Yeah. And so now he's very, very weak. And Pyoko then brings it upon herself. She's like, I need to be the one to help him. And so she basically, we see it, this little mini montage of her, like, kind of nursing him back to health. And then she even has to go back and, like, feed him with the worm, which is really gross for her. And then she also gives him water and stuff like that, and slowly kind of helps him. He finally gets up, and he kind of realizes that she had helped him. And he's like, all right, I'll let you follow me, but just don't come too close. All right. You know, he's kind of like,
yeah, he's softened a little bit. But so first of all, a couple of things, maybe like just small details that may matter. So for a moment, Pyoko thinks he abandoned her, but he didn't. He's just like, hey, come on. And then like immediately as he starts, like kind of walking away, slight twist, not twist, but like Pyoko actually like headbutts him, and he's like, you're supposed to say thank you. So she doesn't just take it. She doesn't just like take it like, I'm going to follow him now. She's actually like confronting him, like, you know, about just like something as simple as a thank you.
I feel Pyoko should be grateful that Keiji doesn't seem to remember that the reason he got injured at all was because he was trying to save her. Like, Keiji could have been like, the only reason I was hurt was because of you. So like, thank you, but go away now or something. Like, he could have been thankful and still told her to hit the road. So it's, I think, benefit, like, her good fortune that he didn't seem to remember that aspect and would just remember the gratitude. Mm-hmm. I think his exact line was, you can stick around as long as you're not a burden, or something of that sort.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is that she already was. So, again, he just doesn't remember, I guess. And so hopefully that this relationship works out in the future. But
yeah, I mean, and just to clarify too, the way I remember it happening was that he tells, after he gets up and he's kind of realized that he'd helped her, he says that line, then he walks away, and then you think she's going to be super happy about it. She's going to be like, oh, wow. But that's when she drop kicks him and is like, why didn't you thank me for helping you? You just walked away.
Yeah. So I actually kind of appreciate that she doesn't just like, you know, she doesn't just accept, oh, I get to follow him now. Like, no, I'm actually going to confront him about this. Even if, she did cause a problem initially.
She's got sass to her, basically.
Right.
And then the final thing that happens in the episode is that suddenly, as they're walking out of the alleyway, this female chicken shows up, the one we saw in the end of the last episode, where she's got that electric thing, and she's catches him. And I love the scene where Keiji's like, it's you. Wait, who are you?
Yeah, that was actually I thought that was the funniest part of the episode. It's like, who are you?
Yeah. And then she says, I've been looking everywhere for you, Keiji. So clearly she knows who he is, and that's where the episode ends. All right. So the caged bird. This was a pretty fun episode overall. My opinion is that I was a little concerned this Pyoko character would be kind of grating and annoying. And I mean, she is a little bit, but I think that's the point of her character to a certain extent. But she was actually more funny than I thought she would be, which is a relief. And I think there was a little more levity in this episode than in the first episode. And I liked that. I hope they continue to do a little levity here and there as much as they can for a show that is basically a, shonen fighting show with, you know,
chickens.
Yeah. Sato, any thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you. It's just so far, like, it's only been two episodes, but it's been just kind of fun and goofy, and, you know, you can't take it too seriously. It is just like, you know, Fish in the North Star with chickens, but it's just fun. Like, I think that's the best way to describe it.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't take it too seriously. Just have a good time. Crocodile.
Yeah. I'm inclined to agree. Like, it knows what it is so far, and it's, I think, executing it pretty well. So I'm not going to say it's like a 10 out of 10 show or anything of that sort, but I'm enjoying it. It is, it is what it says on the tin. It's a rooster who fights, and he's doing a good job, and the supporting cast so far is supporting the show well.
Yeah, I think the next episode obviously is going to be about this new character, this new female chicken, and then judging by the opening, we'll have yet another fourth like main character that'll show up eventually. So
maybe the Virgil to Gage's Dante or something.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking that, like, or like, yeah, or like a Vegeta kind of, you know, character or something. We'll see. All right, so that's Rooster Fighter. I hope it keeps up the quality here. It's not amazing, but it's good.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to the season finale of Primal Season 3. Primal, Season 3, Episode 10, An Echo of Eternity. Okay, let's begin with the rundown. Spear, on his hunt to find his family, finds the bloody scene where everybody was, the big battle that occurred with that black beast, and keeps following the trails until he sees, like, baby bloody footprints, fears the worst, but ends up finding them nearby. Fang is the one fighting the black creature and ends up defeating it. And that's when the whole family is reunited.
Yeah, there's a mix of like flashbacks and like the present. So like Fang is kind of running towards, or, you know, tracking them down. And I think either as a function of the narrative just showing us what happened, but also him kind of piecing together what might have happened from the clues. We got these flashbacks that kind of further develop the Fang versus Black Panther, demon, ghost, whatever the fuck that was fight. And so we see those little bits and eventually see that Fang did persevere. And then Fang persevered as they killed the demon, and then Spear comes, finds it, like, it's impaled and bloody and whatnot. But yeah, I just want to mention that there was a mix of flashbacks, and also I think Spear piecing together what happened based on his tracking skills.
And this is when, again, like, everybody's reunited. Mira understands what's happening now, and the baby's there. He meets the baby for the first time. And Fang is bleeding, but he is recovering. He's not completely out of it. He and Spear have a reunion there, and Fang finally can get a whiff of this much less dead version of Spear and is like, remembers him.
Yeah, basically, Mira's surprised that Spear's somehow rejuvenating himself. Because he smells less like a zombie. Fang, she can recognize that, oh, maybe he's back or coming back. I don't need to be so afraid.
Yeah. Spear gives the little doll that he made to his child, and he's super happy. And then all of a sudden, the happiness is interrupted when the volcano people attack. And the volcano people take the child and abduct the whole family. They take them back to the volcano arena. And the like matriarch woman or whatever kind of holds the baby while they feed that black stuff to the rest of Spear's family while Spear is like chained to this rock and nothing can do it. And as they drink it, Mira, Fang, and the two Fanglings all transform into monstrous versions of each other and start to fight.
This doesn't matter too much, but I assume the reason why like Spear didn't turn into a monster when he drank the goo stuff, is it just like a dose thing? He didn't drink
He kind of did.
Point?
The first time we saw him kind of hulk out. And then I think just the subsequent doses worked more to rejuvenate him, like return him to the world of living. So I think his transformations are more him growing his hair back, his flesh back, and all that sort of stuff. But the very first time he did drink it, we did see him basically hulk out.
Yeah.
It could be a combination of the two, actually. It could be that, like, the first time you take it, you hulk out more. But it could also be that they gave them a super huge dose. Because I got the impression here that the whole point of this was to punish Spear by making him, force him to witness his family killing each other.
Yeah, so it's probably a combination of they probably drank more at one time. Spear can maybe just hold his liquor, so to speak, more.
Yeah.
And just can handle it better than anyone else. But, and yeah, they basically give like the whole pot to Fang, of course, being a big dinosaur. But yeah, they're all monster versions now.
Yeah, they even get like bigger and more fangy. Yep. And yeah.
They like grow teeth like and spines. Like it's not just they get more muscular, like their bone structure changes. Even Mira is kind of like, it's more, it's pretty freaky, but.
Yeah. Like, how does this work? biologically.
Magic. Yeah, the thing is, don't think about it. I guess we're skipping a little bit ahead, but when he turned back to normal, I'm thinking to myself, where did those extra bones go? Because you grew extra bones. It wasn't just muscle.
Yeah.
Like, where did it go?
So I guess it's like kind of like the Hulk again, you know. But anyway, when we come back from the commercial break, he has to watch them fight for a while, gets really worried. But all the whole time he's pulling on his chains. He eventually breaks free. He tries to stop them from fighting, but he really can't. They're powerful and they keep like, you know, he's running around and he's like trying to trick them into not fighting and other things. He does some things like that. It helps a little bit, but he can't stop it. But the thing that does stop the fight is that the volcano erupts. And this, of course, changes everything. Now there's lava flowing into the arena. All of the like volcano people start burning up and all this stuff.
The arena is like literally crumbling and, you know, they start standing on just like floating pieces of land in a lava river, basically.
Spear's able to get the baby away and hold him, but then the demonic Mira attacks and ends up scratching the baby and sees the baby crying. And this is like, it triggers a reversal. It triggers something in her and she starts to return back to normal upon seeing this.
Hearing the baby cry makes her freak out and she's like covers her ears like, stop that. Well, she doesn't speak, but she's screaming. Like hearing the baby cry freaks her out, which I think is obviously triggering her maternal instincts. And so Spear recognizes this and then like forces the baby upon her, and the crying just forces Mira back into normal.
This gives him an idea. And so now with Mira and the baby together, he tries to focus on the T-Rexes. One of the T-Rexes gets a little bit of lava on them and this like shocks them enough that they actually return to normal, and he realizes he can use this. So he takes a spear that was nearby and he dips the tip in some lava and pokes one of the other little T-Rexes with that, and that ends up helping that one. But we're left with the big girl herself, Fang. He tries poking her a bunch of times and it doesn't work. And I don't exactly remember what fixes it, but he does end up doing it.
Eventually works, but he has to do it like 20 times just because she's so huge. So, but it, they're fighting. He's jumping around platforms, dodging the lava, poking Fang, hoping to like shock her out of it. Fang corners Spear onto one like big rock, and then Fang falls off. But Spear falls off. But then the last poke he strikes Fang with shocks you back to normal, and just before Spear falls into lava, which of course would destroy him even as a zombie or half zombie, whatever, and catches him by the leg and brings him back up.
And they all escape, now return to normal. They all escape from the lava in the last moment and head home. We do see them that they finally make it home. They all kind of have like, you know, this reunion back at their home.
Real quick though, the animation, just stepping back just a second, the animation during the whole like battle, like chaotic sequence with the arena was pretty good, like throughout all the animation and the colors, and even not really choreography, but you know, it was all the different things going
around
on at that
and
point.
Skating, right. And the kind of flipping and dipping. I totally know what you mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks great. And so we get a nice little sort of like, I call it kind of like a Spielberg ending, where it's like everything's really good at the end. And then we come to the final scene of the episode, which ends up being a sort of repeat of the final scene from season 2, where we see the now older child riding atop the, you know, somewhat older little T-Rexling.
One of the Fanglings.
Well, they're a lot larger now, so they're significantly older. I mean, I don't know significantly, but they're larger now. They're not quite Fang size, but they're definitely much larger than any.
Well, I don't know how long a T-Rex lives.
Who knows?
But like, obviously the baby was like literally a newborn, and now she's like at least like 14. Probably 15,
like
16,
at least a
teenage.
Decade has passed.
Yeah, like, so it's been like a decade and a half, right?
Wow, really? I kind of thought she looked more like she was like 10, but whatever.
I think at least 10 years, maybe more. So 10 to 15 years, but like at least a decade minimum.
Okay.
And like you guys did say that, you know, Mira is there. And again, I feel this is very much, if not the same, it's very similar to the final scene of season 2, except with one addition, we see that Spear is there and he walks up at the end as well. So we've come full circle to the final season scene from season 2, with this final scene of season three. And that's where the season ends.
Also, Spear has his bone arm healed. It's a regular arm.
I didn't notice that. Oh,
yes, he did.
Yep. Yeah. That was the first thing I looked for. And like, yep, his hand is
on. Oh, wow. Okay.
Because there was a big point before we went to the final scene where Spear is kind of looking at his bony hand and how it's frightening, thinking about how it frightens child. And clearly at some point between then and the final scene, I went back to the volcano, drank some more goo, and healed that hand back up. So yeah, in the final scene, Spear looks totally normal. I guess older, but like totally normal otherwise. Not half zombie, not anything, just totally normal, but I guess a little older, or 10 years old or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's regenerated. But the one thing I did want to say is that I did go back and check the end of season two. The scene is exactly the same, except that it extends a little further because we then get Spear walking to the scene. So it's like basically shot for shot, and then Spear walks in the scene because it's been extended.
I'm glad to hear that because that's what I thought it was, and that's very poetic. So I like that.
One thing I'll notice, this episode is called An Echo of Eternity. Remember what the last episode of second season was called?
No.
Echoes of Eternity.
Oh, clever. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was pretty good. As a really good way to wrap things up. I am kind of shocked that nobody died. Like I said, very Spielberg-like ending, happy ending. So I didn't expect that.
Well, we knew that Mira and everyone we knew would live except for Spear, that was the question mark. So we knew from the second season everyone else had to live.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. I just want to mention that.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. We talked about that. But again, it was not clear if Spear did. He did. And now the show is kind of set up that if they wanted to do another season, they pretty much have everybody available
so
now
the,
to do it.
The whole of season three was just a change of... They changed their mind. Like, no, we can't have Spear die. We need to bring him back.
That was the whole season.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the whole
season. This was just the retcon season. And now season four can be about their child with Spear now present.
Exactly. Except he's not dead, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Well, if you guys want to give your thoughts about this episode, and then I guess if you want, we can look at maybe re ranking.
My thought right now is it's probably fine where it is. Like, I don't think it got... that's my immediate thought. Like, is it significantly better, significantly worse? No, not immediately off the top of my head. I would say it's one or the other. So I'm not super eager to re-rank it. I mean,
okay,
if I wanted to be super cynical, it, like, I was kind of joking before, but if I wanted to be like devil's advocate cynical, it does kind of feel like, yeah, season three, they just decided they changed their mind. Like, they didn't want Spear to die, so they made this whole season just as like a big way to bring him back. But even if that were the case, that's probably the best way to do that.
Yeah,
I guess just take this really weird, strange, creative like idea, like zombie Spear, and have a full season about how zombie Spear revives himself, I guess.
So. Yeah, I've been saying it since the first episode. This is a season of like a story where Gendy was just like, what if we just followed a zombie around? And that's kind of what we did. And then, but to the point where he got back to where he was.
So I guess I would say, did Gendy ever give any insight about why they did this? Like, they feel they finished season two and then like a couple months later, Gendy and maybe whoever else was on his writing team thought themselves, you know what? We shit the bed of that ending last season. Let's unfuck that.
He said that he just wanted to do more with him. It wasn't so much that they thought they didn't like the ending of season two. He just said, I want to do more with Spear, is what he said. And this is one way to do that.
Right. So, I mean, like, I was just curious because they didn't obviously have to retcon the previous ending. They clearly decided to do so, but they didn't have to. So I was just curious if they themselves, either Gendy himself or his writing team or whatever, thought themselves, yeah, we fucked up last season, or if like someone yelled at him, or if they saw the fan reaction from the previous season and were like, oh, maybe we should be stepping something. And, you know, obviously, creator doesn't have to care what this audience thinks or her audience thinks. They can be like, no, this is what I wrote. Fuck y'all. Or they can be like, ooh, maybe you have a point. Let me see if I can do something. You know, this either is valid depending on what the artist wants to do. I was just curious as to what was going through his head and of him and his team as to why they decided to do
it. It's an interesting thought. There's no way we could know. So
I was curious if he said anything. Like, I can't mind read him. I was just wondering if
he... No, the only thing he said that he wanted to do another... He didn't want to give up on Spear. He wanted to do more with him.
Okay.
That's and I, like I said, I think it's an interesting way of doing it. Here's the thing. I'm also with you, Seda, that I don't want to re-rank the show, but I will be honest and say that of the three seasons, this might have been the one I was the most invested in. I think it was more out of like, I could not see where this was going. Like, it was just, it was so different and out there. I was just like, what are we doing? This is interesting. And so I was more invested in the story. I can barely tell you what happened in season one. And I know a little more about what happened in season two. And in season three really kind of had me. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm really engaged in this exploration of a zombie's life, you know? So, but not enough maybe to re-rank it or anything.
I guess I would say season one was kind of more monster of the week. Like, it wasn't literally monster of the week, but it had more of that feel to it. And season two had some mini plot lines and a thread, obviously. But this is, I think, the season that probably had the most consistent thread, but probably because the whole point of the season was retcon the previous ending. That was like the season had one aim, as opposed to the first season was just Spear and Fang going on crazy adventures, and then second season was Spear and Fang chase down Mira for part of it, and there's also some Viking battles, and there's also some Egyptian queen or whatever, and then there's some Hades or whatever going on too. So there's kind of a little bunch of things going on all over the place. I mean, this season was just one through line. I guess
the neat thing is that it is a retcon, but they got to have their cake and eat it too by saying, well, it really wasn't a retcon. He was always there. You just didn't see him, you know.
That reminds me of that meme. You know the meme where like, oh, I'll hear of all my friends and they're just off in a corner out frame laughing. Yeah, so that kind of makes you think about it a little bit. I guess my general sentiment is I guess before this episode, I would definitely say if I wanted to re-rank the show, I'd probably maybe pull it down a little bit just because I didn't feel if the... Like, I wasn't necessarily a fan of the ending of season two. I didn't necessarily think that it needed to be retcon or there needed to be more or like I demand more primal. I think I've expressed before was, do we need a third season? Like, I feel this needs to justify itself. And I think the ending... Again, I don't think the ending of season two needed to be retcon, but if you're going to retcon it, this is probably the best way to go about it. So I feel, I guess, maybe a little bit more positive about the season, because if they had an aim, if they had a goal, I guess they accomplished it and they did it okay and did only well job, I suppose. But I'm still like, did we need a season three? I guess it's maybe the best way they could have done it. I'm not sure if it like really, really needed it. And so, like, if I was to re-rank it, I would maybe be tempted to go a little lower, but, like, it wouldn't be a massive change. And so if you two are feeling like, leave it as it is, that's fine as well. I guess I think this ending was pretty good. It, I guess, gave the season some purpose, so I wasn't really just, was there any point? But I don't know. Maybe part of me is, like, felt a little cynical about it, but I don't know. I'm just
walking through my thoughts. If we want to raise its ranking position, that means it'd have to jump over Dr. Stone. Do we want to do that?
I do not think. I would not raise. I mean, just my personal thoughts.
I was kind of joking, but also I got a press release the other day about Crunchyroll. I get Crunchyroll press releases. I guess the fourth core is coming up.
Yeah, very soon. Yeah,
for Dr. Stone last season or whatever. So that was one of the things they were advertising coming up.
I thought you were talking about when the press release for when they got hacked like
early. Oh, no. I saw that. But no, I don't think they'd send out a press release for that. They probably send out a statement. But I got their like spring schedule or whatever. And Dr. Stone was one of the things they were highlighting. Yeah. So
guys, if you haven't seen it, don't watch it because it could come to the block. And it's so good.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do whatever you want. But I'm just saying it'd be so much cooler if you didn't see it. But anyway.
right. So yeah, if everyone's leaving the same, I guess that's fine. If I were to re-rank it, maybe a little lower, maybe leave the same.
I think also because I would probably debate you about, I think I would rather go up, but I don't feel strongly about it going up.
So it cancels it out.
And yeah, and again, I don't know if like I needed a purpose for this to exist outside of the fact that Genndy Tartakovsky loves to make it and what he makes is good. So for me, it existing is fine. It doesn't have to have a story reason to exist outside of the fact that it's a well-made show.
Or like, I think it's something can be like still great content, but sometimes I feel this, like sometimes I feel it's fine to leave a story as it is. It, like there are sometimes I consume a story and I feel to myself, wow, I really need more of this. And sometimes I consume a story and I feel, you know what? That's enough. I feel good. And it can be both cases a good story. Like it's not just good things I want more, bad things I want no more. It can be good things I want more, good things I'm good. I kind of felt the latter about Primal 2, but like, you know, I guess that's just how I felt about the matter, at least at that point.
Okay. Well, we'll leave it where it is. 14 is a respectable position to keep it, so I'm fine with that. Okay. Well, let's move on to our next show then. And that, of course, is Blue Lock. Blue Lock, Episode 7, Rush. Now, I thought this was going to be Rush as in, you know, you make a rush move. But no, it actually ends up being something different that we learn about later. So the episode starts and we get Chigiri's flashback to when he was a kid. And when he was a kid, he was super fast, so fast that he got very confident at soccer to the point where he kind of got a little cocky, super self-assured.
And a lot of the other characters, like just kind of the nameless side characters, started calling him like he's like a wonder, a genius. I think genius is the word they used.
Yeah, I remember those two girls were fawning over him, but then as soon as he gets injured, they're like, oh, he doesn't look so smart now. I'm like, wow, you're a bitch. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I thought that too. Yeah, he does get the ACL injury, and then his whole world is turned upside down. He thought he was the greatest shit ever, and now he's not. And he's actually to the point where he's afraid to run because he's told by his doctor that if he ever runs too hard on that knee, it could permanently, you know, put him out of it. And so he's trying to play, but he can't run, which is his whole gimmick. He's so fast. So he gets super depressed. And now he's at the point in his life where he just wants his career to end. So the thing I said earlier, like an episode or two ago, ended up being true. He really just does want like to go out. And he's just looking for an excuse to stop playing soccer. And he saw Blue Lock as an opportunity for that to happen.
It does feel weird to me that he'd even show up at Blue Lock if he felt this way. But I mean, I guess he's here. But yeah,
it is weird that like, why doesn't he just quit? Like, why does he have to be like, it's almost like he's a coward.
Well, because then he couldn't be a character in the show if he quit.
Well, yeah, of course.
Sure.
But I meant like the logical thing is that he would just be like, I'm going to give up soccer now. But that's less interesting, I guess.
I just take it as he had mixed emotions.
Okay.
Because it's sort of like he wants fate to make him quit. But doing that risks fate saying, oh, you want to quit? Let me just break your ACL again, or tear your ACL again. Like, that could be the way fate makes him quit. So I don't know.
Yeah. It's one of these things where I took it more like he doesn't have the actual constitution to just walk away. He has to be defeated for him to like be like, oh, I guess I have to stop now, instead of just stopping on his own. That's the way I took it.
But defeated, of course, could have been another ACL tear, which would have been catastrophic, because even if he can't play, you can't play soccer anymore, but also just your daily regular movement is impaired too. So it's not just you lose your soccer career. It's just your quality of life diminishes generally.
At the end of this episode, that may be where we're going. We'll see. So anyway, all that stuff I just discussed happens right before a very early commercial break. And when we come back from the commercial, the match with, is it Y? Is that who we're playing? I think it's Y.
Team X?
Team
Y. I thought Y was the previous team.
It's Y.
Maybe,
Maybe
X was the previous team. Yeah.
I think X is who we beat before. And I think W is who we're fighting next week. Or is V next week?
V is next week.
Okay.
I think it was Y. Whatever, whoever. The same people were fighting last episode. The match is still on. Kuon is there. He's goading on Isagi. He's like, see, you know, you're a bunch of chumps. I played you. You know, you're never going to win. And Isagi gets really mad, and he starts to get, like, crazy. Like, I wrote down, he gets crazy determined, especially in the eyes.
Yeah, he's basically, it kind of feels like last gasp, where he's like, well, if no one else is going to try, or like, it's up to me, I have to do this. I will, you know, it's like nothing else is going to work. I have to try this. And even at there's a point, and this it comes back to this, but there's a point where like Shigeru is kind of the whole time just kind of, you know, being a wet blanket or whatever. And Isagi kind of like goes up to him and is like, move it.
He pushes him down, doesn't he? He like actually.
Yeah, he pushes him down, but he says move it, and like that's actually a key phrase that he says move it, because that comes back, later. But yeah, so he's like not even putting up with Chiguri's kind of, you know, sullen attitude anymore. He's just like, if you're gonna just, he doesn't say this, but kind of like, if you're just gonna be a sad sack, I'm gonna do what I can to try to win. You get out of my way. He literally says move it, so.
And we get the blue flames in his eyes and everything, and he's making a rush for it. He tries really hard, and he's doing okay, but he's not doing great. But Chiguri sees this in Isagi, and he's like, it reminds him of his young self. It kind of gives him this like wow moment where he's like, this reminds me of back when I was a kid and just that incredible passion I used to have for soccer. And we saw this earlier in the episode, but it comes to the point here where there's like this metaphorical chain on his leg that we see depicted in the show, where it's like a chain that he's chained to the ground because he can't run on his leg. And this is the moment where he breaks the chains, and we see the metaphorical chain break literally. And that's when he decides to start running, and everybody, both teams, are just shocked because this is his weapon. He is like incredibly fast.
Like those weird ass brothers with the crazy eyes and eyebrows, like they knew Chiguri from the past, so they knew how fast he could be. They didn't realize his speed was back, basically, because they've been spending the entire episode, in addition to Kuon, telling everyone to like, hey, quick, you little bitches, you can't win, it's over, give up, I have the high ground, yada yada yada. Being annoying little asses. And of course then when Chiguri gets his groove back, his mental locks break, basically. He just starts over them literally.
Yeah. And at the very last moment, the ball is kind of near the enemy's goal.
Well, before that,
oh, go ahead.
Kind of getting at what I was saying earlier, I think it's Kuon who has the ball or is about to get the ball, but then Shigeru runs up to him and then he goes, move it, and takes the ball from him. So I thought that was nice, where he was on the receiving end of that from Isagi when he was like, you know, down in the dumps or whatever, and then like when he's got his confidence back, he kind of like brings that back out. You know, is it the most poetic thing? Maybe not. I just thought it was kind of neat.
It was fine. Yeah, I like that too. It was good. And in that moment, Kuon, whoever, I think it's Kuon who had the ball, is like, I still got the ball. There's no way you're gonna do it. But he kind of like, Chiguri kind of jumps and just with the very tip of his toe is able to push the ball forward, and it goes flying into the net, and then it ties the game up. So they didn't lose. It's a tie game.
Yeah, the way the points worked out, that's all they needed to like stay alive.
I'll be honest with you. I do not want this explained, but I don't understand the scoring system, so whatever. I just know they didn't lose.
I'm very vaguely familiar with like World Cup scoring, where yes, number of goals you have like matters, and obviously wins and losses. But like, okay, I'm assuming the math works out that mathematically they're still alive if they win the next game or whatever. So
I also think Blue Lock has its own like set of rules too that explained earlier, so that kind of complicates things a bit.
I'm just sort of trusting, without actually like getting a notepad and writing it down myself, that okay, the math probably works out that yes, this is probably true, that they all they have to do is tie and they can stay alive.
This reminds me of something I've been wanting to mention for a while. Every so often, the show will show a grid in the corner of where all the team members are and what their positions are on the field. And it's on the screen for like 2 seconds. And I'm like, there is nobody who can take in all that information in 2 seconds and know where everyone is.
I mean, it's a lot easier if you're reading the manga. I'm sure it's a lot easier, which is probably where to put it from.
It's one of these things that just does not translate to anime at all, to have that little that little guide in the corner, unless it was staying on there for 30 seconds, there's no way I could make anything out from that. I just think it's funny that they do that. I guess if you pause the show, you could be like, oh, okay, there's where that guy is. Okay.
I guess
anyway. Guess. Yeah. So they survive to go on to fight again. We get a very brief scene where everybody goes back to the locker room and they're showering. And
this is what you were asking about last week. Like, regardless of what happens at the end of the game, like, what is Kuon going to do? Because he
I think what happened is he ran away. I think they beat his ass, the other team.
Yes.
Why didn't you tell us to beat his back? So they beat his ass, and then once they were done beating his ass, because I think Isagi tried to stop them because Isagi was being a good shonen protagonist and saying, hey, stop beating him up. And then Kuon took that opportunity to run off into the distance. And so.
Yeah. By the way, there was a fully like naked guy in the scene. I just throw that out there.
I think that's that's the guy with the multicolored hair.
I forget his name. But you know,
scroll up in the chat, and we'll get his name. But yeah, he's done this before. That's he has like no shame. He just like, yeah, I'll just walk out. You know,
he threw his junk right into the other kid's face.
I'm looking at the names again. That guy's name is Bachira.
That is
Raichi.
Bachira's the one with that like little bit of blonde hair at the base of his neck.
Oh yeah, that's no. I'm talking about the kid who has like the buzz cut, who's lower ranked Isagi.
It was in his face.
I
reposted this
right in there, you strutting in there, basically like aggressively.
But yeah, Bachira like, there's been a few scenes that whenever they're showering, he has like no shame.
Mm-hmm. And also fan service. You got to get your fan service in there. That's the only reason
lots of sweaty young men.
Yep. Anyway, they get done and they're walking down the hall and they peer and they hear someone talking. They look into the little cafeteria area and they see none other than Kuon, and he's already talking with Team V. And he's trying to do the same thing that he did, where he's like, I'll tell you everything you know, and blah, 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 blah. You know, it's trying to do the same trick, except this time Team V is like, nah, that sounds lame. I don't want to do that. They turn him down. And as they're getting ready to get up and leave, one of the Team V's members, who's like this very lazy kid, who's very
he's kind of small. He's small and he's got like silverish hair.
Yeah. And he's just like, whatever. Will somebody carry me? And he says some disparaging words about soccer on his way out. And Isagi hears this and gets really mad and gets up in his face. And he's like, you shouldn't talk that way about soccer.
The world where soccer is everything, no insults will be tolerated.
Yeah. But yeah, we've got like one of these tropey characters who's just like, you're not even sure like why is he there, but he's probably super talented, but he's just like, doesn't seem to care that he's there. That kind of character.
Yeah. I mean, the Team V was all like archetypes. There was the guy who was pretending to be British or something. And then there was the other purple guy who had his own weird quirks too. And
even if Kuon, even if they agreed to his plan, like, this doesn't work as well the second time when your team that you're betraying knows about it.
That's true.
Like, what are you gonna do? Like, even if they agreed, like, you're gonna suit up and be like, okay, just might as well go to the other side because we know you're gonna betray us or whatever. Like, I mean, obviously there'd still be like a 12-on-10 advantage if they agreed, but still, like, you can't surprise him again.
I think also, wasn't it the sleepy silver haired kid? Oh yeah, I'm just thinking, there's a kid in King of Fighters 15 who has the same archetype, the sleepy kid. I guess I don't know if you are fighting game players or whatever, but there's a similar character in King of Fighters 15, similar characters everywhere, but that was just, for example, a Pokemon. Anyway, I think he even mentioned to Kuon, how are you going to actually win Blue Lock if you keep doing this? Like, there's no, like, you can advance a little bit, maybe, but at some point, you're just going to get your ass beaten. Not like, you didn't mean in the broken knees caps, but more in the, like, you'll just lose and be out because you can there's no way this can get you to the top. Like, you need to be good to win.
He's right. Yeah, that's a good point, because it's like, there's only so far. I mean, that's the point. That's the whole point, really, is that Kuon's like, technique, his backstabbing is never going to get him the whole way. Here's a question though, as we finish talking about this episode, is he still on their team?
I guess so.
Yes. Or like, we see
by his
boss. Seen the next episode preview, there is a whole conversation where I think it is Bakugo is screaming to Ego.
Oh, that's right.
But what are they going to do with the traitor?
Yeah. So this is interesting that they're, I mean, you're right that what you were saying, Crocodile, that he's going to get like his knees broken. I don't think that's going to happen, but I guess that kind of happened in a very tame way in this episode. But like, I mean, I feel like from what I saw in the preview is that like, he's going to remain on the team and he's just going to be like this, like question mark.
Well, I guess like the other characters are basically going to be like, well, we don't trust you anymore. So our options are we either play with just 10 of us and be at a disadvantage, or they allow him to start to redeem himself. Like,
yeah,
are you going to play with us or not? You know, because the other option is that we're handicapped. Like, we have only 10 of us. So that's the decision they have to make, is do they trust him enough to like make a redemption so they can play with a full team, because they don't have any other option.
Let me just say right now, if they end up redeeming this character over time, I don't know how I feel about that at the moment. Like right now, I just feel like that's a tropey thing. That's like a kind of, it's one of those things where like, again, it just feels like, okay.
Yeah. But I wonder, like, they're not going to play with the like one man short the rest of the tournament or whatever. Right. Like,
I mean, thing though, isn't it like more mentally taxing to play with a full team, but you have to keep watching corner your eye if your teammate's going to betray you rather than them not being there? It actually seems like it spends more energy to be like, is he betraying us?
I mean, neither choice is like ideal, but maybe they'll introduce another character that'll somehow take the new 11th spot. I don't know how that works.
That's the thing. That's kind of what I was hoping would happen, but I have a feeling. What about
that one character that was introduced a couple episodes ago that was just kind of, he was like a professional player. I don't know if he would be.
I remember that guy.
Like, trying to think, is there any other character that's been introduced right now that could possibly be a substitute? Like, because what are the options? Like, list them out. They allow him to play and they like maybe start to redeem himself. Like that, I get what C. Kohler is saying. And like, that'd kind of be a little bit tropey. And like, is that actually going to work? Or they just kick him out and they have to play with 10 people, or they somehow get like a new 11th person. I don't know the rules of Blue Lock and how that would work, but those are the options.
I mean, I guess we'll have to see. Like, I mean, I will say, obviously, being the type of show it is, they were never going to actually break his knees. I'm just saying, in most real life circumstances, knee breakage would have been justified. Like, obviously, that's still assault and a crime and morally reprehensible, but like, in this context, with emotions flaring, given how thoroughly the betrayal was, I don't blame someone for going around breaking kneecaps, because it's not like people don't break kneecaps in real life, regardless of if it's a crime or not.
But yeah, I was thinking of, has there been any other character introduced that could possibly like join the squad? And the only person that came to mind was, they showed like that one player, I forget his name. It was like three or four episodes ago. Where he like was like at the conference and he was like back in Japan getting his passport or something, and he was actually like, you know, he was playing for another team. I forget, he's like, the Japanese team isn't any good, but you know, I don't know what they're doing with that character yet. He's gonna come back eventually, right?
I mean, so, given that he's a professional already,
I don't know if that works.
I think he's gonna be more like a mentor or something, but my thing, the only other thing I want to say about those three options is that the thing that I think is most likely to happen is going to be option one. And the way they'll do it is the most like banal way, where it's going to just be Isagi standing up for him. And I'm going to be like, oh God.
Yeah.
It's a good cheesy protagonist way of doing it. You know,
we've got to work together, guys. We'll be a team.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
There's also maybe the wild card option of that kid who was eliminated in the first episode. Maybe wasn't actually eliminated or something. No. Or maybe there's Ego as like, if you do this something, you can get back an in card or something. Like, I could see that happening, or maybe, like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. Is there any way, how did that guy get eliminated? It was just in that weird non-soccer thing, right?
Yeah, because I guess like each group had 12 players, but obviously a team only has 11 players.
All right, okay.
And they did like a sort of like a game of dodgeball tag or whatever.
Because like, as it is right now, no one can leave Blue Lock unless they leave as part of a team.
Yes.
Yeah.
There isn't a mechanism that we know of for like the team roster to change at this point.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
We just don't know if that mechanism doesn't exist at all or if it's about to be introduced next episode. We have no idea. Or at least I have no idea.
We'll find out very soon. And that's it for Blue Lock. I mean, if anything, Blue Lock is giving us stuff to talk about. It does some things okay, but I'm not into it. But I still think it's like kind of fun to watch a little bit. It's fun to watch in a Toonami way watching, I guess. I don't know. Nothing great. Okay. Well, I guess we'll move on to the next show, Tokyo Revengers. Tokyo Revengers, Episode 7, Revive. And as I mentioned to Seda last week, Crocodile, every episode of Tokyo Revengers is an R word.
Oh, really? Interesting.
At least for the first season. Yep.
Also, this week's Blue Lock is an R word, but that's just a coincidence. All right. So the episode starts out and we're there. Osanai is there with all his Mobius thugs. And Osanai and Mikey kind of taunt each other. They're kind of like, you know, ruffling their feathers and being like, who's tougher? It's like they're going to fight. But then Pa steps up and he's like, no, let me do it. I'm going to take him on. He's the one who's got the real grudge.
Yeah, because it's his girlfriend that was hurt, right?
Yeah, and I think Osanai himself did it, right? Osanai was the culprit, right?
Oh, I don't know if that's true. It might be. That might be true. I don't remember who exactly. I thought it was just him, someone on his crew, but
I don't remember. But they actually do mention that the girl was raped. Like,
yes, they mentioned that before. Yeah.
Yeah, they've said this. So it's like, this is pretty serious. This isn't just you beat him up. This is like sexual assault of the worst kind. So.
So Pa steps up and he's ready to fight. He seems like a big tough guy, but unfortunately Osanai is just stronger and he just beats the shit out of Pa to the point that his face is wrecked and he ends up falling down.
I did love the part where the kid in blue was saying, don't worry, Mikey, Pa's got this, and Pa did not have it whatsoever.
Yeah. Although this kind of plays off here in a moment because Mikey then walks up and he kind of picks Pa up, kind of ignoring Osanai in this moment, and kind of hands him off. And he just tells Osanai, he's like, oh, well, see, Pa didn't lose. Now, he didn't lose to you. And it's like just blatantly lying. But to a certain extent, he's like standing up for him. And then Mikey walks up and just kicks the fuck out of Osanai and knocks him out.
Yeah, basically in one kick.
Yeah, this is like his move, apparently.
Yeah.
And everybody's shocked. I think it's always kind of funny to me. I mean, it's very, I don't know. It's kind of generic to me that like all they have to do is knock out this one guy and all of Mobius is just like shocked to the point of being like afraid.
Yeah, like why are the rest of you even here?
Well, I mean, they're followers. They're followers. They look like Osanai is obviously the alpha. The rest of you guys are betas. They just follow
apparently,
the
journey. Like ultra betas.
They just
ultra betas.
Anyway, so much so that Draken then says, hey, all you fucking punks, you now work for us. You're part of Mobius, all you. You're part Toman now.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay, I guess.
And then the police start to come.
Yeah, but what we didn't see coming was that Pa sneaks up and he has a knife and he stabs Osanai, probably killing him.
No, he's not. They say later that he's not dead, but I was wondering in this moment, like, wait, did Osanai die? Because if he died, that would obviously change the future. But they mentioned later when Draken comes around, jumping ahead a bit, that he didn't die. So I'm like, okay, that did not change.
Yeah, so this whole event must have been what led Osanai to be the way he was in the future.
Yeah, my assumption going into this was that Osanai did not die because they already met him in the present.
Well,
so like, this doesn't
seem
like...
Yeah, but things can change. I was wondering if it was like we changed the future now accidentally thing, but no, it's not.
No, it didn't. Well, at least to me, it didn't strike me as this being a fork, but rather that this was kind of like unexpected, kind of like, because what's it called? Takamichi had been wondering, or Mikey had been wondering, not Mikey, Takamichi had been wondering what caused Draken and Mikey to fight. What's like, there was some kind of swerve that was coming that Takamichi couldn't foresee, but we knew had to come because to lead to the eventual fighting and whatnot. But at least to me, I didn't take it as a change, but more like an establishment of like, okay, here's when things start going south.
Yeah.
I guess that was just me, maybe.
So because he stabbed him, Pa says that he's going to stay behind when the cops come and everybody else scatters. That's when we get the commercial break. Takamichi was following Mikey and Draken, and then he passed out in the alleyway. When he wakes up, he's in the hospital, and Emma is there.
And he grabs a boob.
Yes, he wakes up
for no reason. Just
he just kind of reaches forward and is like, "What's this?" Squish, squish. But she doesn't care, and she starts crying, and she says that Draken and Mikey are now fighting, and they've never fought like this before. It's really, really bad. And this is This is the one thing about this episode I did not like, is that the whole like Draken Mikey fighting kind of happens off screen.
Well, that's the thing. Well, first of all, I think some of like the boob grab, and then like the Mihina walks in and it looks like a blowjob, I guess. Like, yes. I don't know. This feels kind of juvenile. I don't think this is funny. Like, I don't know. Right. I could have done without it. Like, whatever. I don't know. I didn't really care for that. But they actually mention later. I'm jumping ahead here because okay. I was actually thinking the same. I was thinking the same thing you were, because like, wait, why are they fighting exactly? Because neither of them are at fault for anything that happened. So I'm not sure why they're fighting. Like, I feel like, did I miss something? But no, then later in the episode, when they actually like literally start fighting, even Takamichi says like out loud, verbally, "I don't know what started this." So like, oh, okay. So I'm in the same shoes as Takamichi. We don't know. I don't know why they're fighting exactly.
I mean, I think Emma said it was because they each blame each other for Pa stabbing Osanai and then himself in jail. I mean, that's what she said, but obviously
it's not really like convincing, though. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's made worse by the fact that there's a scene. I don't want to go into details, but it's like he goes home, but then his old friends come and show up, and we have this scene where it's like a real like misdirect where they're like, "Oh no, they fight like this all the time. It's no big deal."
Oh, it's like, oh
no, this is a big deal, and it's like this whole scene was pointless.
Right.
Yeah, that was a little weird, like, aha, shit's fucked, haha, just kidding, haha, oh, we're not just kidding. And it was kind of like, thanks for wasting 5 minutes, I suppose.
Exactly, it felt like a time waste. But anyway, by the way, it is now August 1st, this is the day that Draken dies, or should die, and Draken also shows up, along with the other friends. He shows up and decides to pay Mikey a visit, or pay Takamichi a visit. And as they head outside, that's when Mikey Sano shows up. And they are clearly very much, like, again, at this point in the episode, you're not 100% sure. Are they really fighting? Are they not fighting? Well, it's made very perfectly clear now. They are definitely fighting. They're angry at each other to the point that they're fighting over wanting to hang out with Takamichi, to the point where they actually just start picking up his stuff and breaking it.
Yeah, Mikey picks up a bike. And this whole scene is, like, dramatic, but also there's, like, trying to be goofy. It's a little weird. Like, no, that's my favorite bike. And then he throws the bike and he's like, my childhood. And like, okay, that's a little strange having this.
I kind of like the part where Draken just starts picking stuff up and just smashing it. Like, with Mikey throwing the bike, you can tell that Mikey's trying to hurt Draken. So there's like a point to that. But then at some point, like, Draken just picking up things, just like, I'm so mad, smashes it on his knee. It's just like, what are we doing here? Like, it's just.
It's dumb. It's dumb, and it's like, oh, they're thugs. Okay, I guess. But yeah, it's goofy. I don't like it. It's very tonally weird. And ultimately, the episode ends with Takamichi getting very pissed off at both of them. And he's like, you guys are going to stop now. And that's where the episode ends.
And all of his friends who are basically like the peanut gallery now are like, wait, there's no way Takamichi's going to try to stop these two. And he's like, yeah, that's what he's going to do. He's going to try. Because obviously, at this point, Takamichi, like, this was his whole goal like for coming back to the past at this point was to stop them from fighting. And so far he has not succeeded. So like, this is like his last chance to get them to stop.
Yeah. This is very reminiscent of like episode 2, where he's like, I've got to finally stand up and change things. I think that's what's about to happen here. But
yeah,
anyway.
But yeah, so, Emma, who I guess is, like Draken's girlfriend.
I think so.
Mentioned like they're fighting something about like how, what happened with Osanai. But yeah, I don't think it's exactly clear like what specifically, if there is anything that like Mikey's upset about, like Draken, you should have gotten out of there sooner so that Pa couldn't have stabbed him or something. I don't like it. It was a little bit off screen, like C. Kohler put it. Like we never saw exactly like what specific thing there may be at conflict about.
Other than that, something know. To
do. Yeah, I like mean, will they or are we just basically is the explanation just they don't like what happened with the outcome of this Mobius fight and they're mad at each other now, and that's leave it at that.
Yeah, and again, it's all made even more ambiguous when you hear his friends being like, "Ah, this happens all the time," and it's like, "Well,
yeah, okay. Like they're not too upset," but
it's weird. Okay, so having said all that, this was probably my least favorite episode of Tokyo Revengers this season. It's not terrible, but I just was not into it.
Yeah, I agree.
It's kind of frustrating and weird, and like the comedy doesn't land, and some of the motivations of the characters feel a little off. So I'm just kind of not sure.
Yeah, like this episode had like the wasted time with like the puzzle scene that seemed kind of weird. Some of the comedy, some of like the girlfriend like haha blowjob joke, like
yeah,
I don't know. This is the worst. Almost... Like Hina was upset at Takemichi because he woke up randomly with like Emma on him. That was like not very explained, whatever.
Like, she was just like, not, yeah, crying in his lap.
Well, that was like I meant like a previous episode.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Like Takemichi wakes up and like Emma was in her underwear on him. Like okay, whatever. But like she learns about that, or Hina learns about that. And so she's upset with Takemichi, and now she sees like Emma, like, with him again, and it's like this sort of like drama between these characters, it doesn't really work for me. Like it feels kind of juvenile.
I don't even think it's drama. I think it's just a moment to have some levity, because I don't think she's gonna really, I don't think it's gonna negatively affect their relationship even.
Well the previous episode Hina literally just walked off because she was upset, so that's where that relationship right, is at the moment.
She feels mad, but they're not in danger of breaking up over something like this. It's just more right. The author well, like, haha, isn't this funny? Wacky hijinks. And like,
that's kind of my point, though, is like, she's obviously, as a character, she's coming to check up on Takemichi in the hospital, but then like bumps into like another hijink. And it's just like, come on.
Yeah. And like I said, the whole scene with his friend showing up was completely pointless and dumb. And I was like, and confusing, and made me confused, where I'm like, well, what am I supposed to believe here?
We saw him complete that very large puzzle. That's super important detail.
Yeah.
2,500 pieces is a lot.
Don't break that. That's what, yeah, like Draken was going to like smash it, or he did smash it. And it was just like, okay, I guess, whatever. Why would he even care? Like that's another thing. Why would Takemichi care that a puzzle got broken that he just spent an hour working on? He's in the past.
Yeah. No, he spent 72 hours working on it. He said it took him like 3 days.
Whatever. Nothing that is inconsequential to everything. To the point that it's like, why do you care? I don't know.
It's weird.
Yeah, whatever. Any other thoughts on this, Crocodile? I've said my bit.
No, I think we're good. Oh, actually, there's just one thought I want to say. That this episode may have been revived. Block was Rush. Animal 3 was a retcon. Rooster Fighter is about roosters. And then One Piece is about red stones. We've got a lot of red. We've got a lot of R today. I saw the pattern. Figured out this conspiracy.
That's true. Well, speaking of that, let's go on to... Now, I know we talked about this before we recorded, that Seda had not watched this episode. Are you okay with us talking about it?
You can talk about it. I'm probably going to watch it as soon as we stop recording. So, okay. Like,
I'm going to do my
spoil one episode.
I'm going to do my best effort to sell it, because it is pretty interesting. So,
okay,
let's go ahead and talk about One Piece.
I see in your notes, sorry, before you say the title, I see in your notes that you mention a pony glyph. And whenever that's mentioned, like, oh, okay, there's some info here.
Yeah,
maybe, or at least start a, like, something might be important.
One Piece, episode 769, A Red Stone, A Guide to the One Piece. So
that sounds important.
It does. It's very important. This is very important, actually. So anyway, we see the group are walking into, you know, they're inside the whale tree, and they end up stopping at this room, and Robin looks up and she sees the crest of the Kozuki clan. It's the same thing that Kanjiro has on his back. And she's like, oh, this place is, related to the Kozuki clan. But then she also spots a poneglyph nearby, but not just any poneglyph. This poneglyph is red. The minks talk about how they know of Nico Robin, like her. They know of her story, that she was someone who from Ohara and that she has the ability to read poneglyphs. While this is going on, the boys are kind of egging on Raizo. They're complaining about the fact that he's acting lame, that he isn't a cool looking ninja, that he's not using his ninjutsu powers. They just keep like being like just making sad faces and being grumpy and stuff. And Raizo just ultimately just gets very angry. And he's like, I'll show you. And then he just ends up doing a whole bunch of like ninja techniques. And he does a lot of them. Like, and this is very, very Naruto coded, I think deliberately.
Yeah, I think wasn't it someone had mentioned, maybe even Grand mentioned, like Naruto's ending just as this arc was being written in the manga. So this law of this is a homage to that, I think.
Like, I think Law even says, can you do the shadow clone, and stuff like that. And he's doing all these things and everybody and all the boys are just suddenly now they're in delight because they're seeing a ninja do his thing and he's doing all the moves. We leave the commercial break. We come back. The Wano folks, the three Wano guys, step outside for a moment, and they see the destruction of the city, and they kind of cry. And we see like flashbacks to the city, what they saw back in the, you know, when they saw the minks were lively there, and now they just see the destruction. So they're just kind of crying over what the minks did for them. And then we come to the real meat of the potato, meat of the episode, not the potato.
Meat of the potatoes.
The meat of the potato. The meat of the episode. We go back inside, and Robin has now finished deciphering the poneglyph. And she's talking to Nami, and she says, here's what I've learned. And Nami's like, wow, I think these are coordinates. And this is when Dogstorm is there. It's like, yes, Yugata are right. This isn't just any poneglyph. This is what's called a road poneglyph. And the road poneglyph has coordinates to a location. And this road poneglyph is one of the ways to discover one way to get to the One Piece. And everybody's like, what the what? This will help us find the One Piece? And they're like, yeah, but it's here's how it works. You see, there are actually four road poneglyphs. Each one is a destination on a map. When you plot all four of the road poneglyphs, and you were to draw a line between them, where they converge will take you to the final island, Laughtail, where the One Piece rests. So this is the big revelation, that they now have 1/4 of a piece of the actual location of the final island. And that's where the episode ends. And Luffy's just like, oh my God, I'm going to find the One Piece.
Yeah, I was laughing when Luffy said, oh wow, Laughtail, it's so close. We're almost there. And I remember
I haven't seen this episode. I was actually about to make that joke. Like, wow, they're almost there now.
Yeah, Luffy says that, and I think to myself, aren't there like 1,000 more episodes left of this? So not even close.
Not in time, but what is changed now is that unlike everything up until this point where they're just going from island to island and island, they now have something to do. What they're going to do now is they need to collect the coordinates from all four road poneglyphs in order to find Laughtail. This is their new macro goal, and that's been set up now. So that's it. That's the episode. Like I said, this is kind of changes the direction of the show and the story in a little bit. I mean, they're still going to do everything they've talked about doing. They need to go to Whole Cake Island and try to find Sanji and help him. But along the way, they need to be looking for these road poneglyphs.
Now, I know this was established forever ago in like Water 7 and his lobby, but Robin can read poneglyphs. Do we know of anyone else who can read poneglyphs?
Well,
like I'm trying to remember, I'm assuming there's more, but has anyone else been?
Well, kind of. I don't want to go into it. I won't say, but I will say that think of this. Somebody made the poneglyphs.
Yeah.
But that's all I'll say.
I mean, you'd think the answer could be whoever made the poneglyphs are now dead, because this is from the Void Century, which is hundreds of years ago, right?
Correct. Yeah, the poneglyphs are old. Yeah.
So I guess it's a matter of like how many long species are there. I guess there are giants, and who else are, can live hundreds of years in one piece?
I'm just thinking like most, a lot of people don't have a robin. So like these road poneglyphs are only valuable to the one, to the Straw Hat Pirates because they have Robin. And I know like Robin's like bounty that she has is primarily because she has this ability. Like this is the main reason why she, but like, it, I almost feel like it needs to be like, she needs to be like almost higher than Luffy in a sense. Because, I'm kind of joking, but kind of not, because like yeah. if she was captured or, you know, like someone had a bounty and took her out, like then that kind of ruins everything. Which I know this is already established, yeah. But like now especially so we, like a poneglyph, it literally leads to the One Piece. So
right, like I mean there's a reason that when she had her first wanted poster, it was from when she was a child.
Yeah.
And she had like a, I think it was like a 75 million berry bounty. It was like a higher bounty than Luffy did at the beginning.
Yeah, I think it was 80 million or something.
I'd have to check the like the history of the bounties, but yeah, like, and I know this is the reason why she has a bounty, but it's just like now, especially now that we know that a red poneglyph or a road poneglyph like literally is a coordinate, is like not just, cuz up to this point they were like history. So it'd be like maybe, you know, mm-hmm. world secrets or whatever. But now it's like literally like coordinates, like oh, that's even more crucially important Robin is now. So
yeah. Yep, and there's people out there who are looking for the One Piece as well, and they're going to run into the same situation, so we'll just have to see what their plans are. But yeah, so big deal. This was kind of like, again, these one of these big things I've been talking about. Like they really dropped some like kind of world-altering lore in this arc.
I guess it's an interesting question about how a road poneglyph wound up in the back of a giant elephant. I wonder if that's going to be explained at any point in the future.
Well, for what it's worth, in this episode, Dogstorm did say that, I think he said that it's here because the minks were protecting it for the Kozuki clan.
Oh, so he dragged it to them. Okay, so he brought it over here. Okay, and hit it
something
away.
Like that. And that's why that symbol was in there, something to that effect. Like they were the minks were charged with protecting it, is what I'll say, because that's what he said in the episode.
Okay. So I'm curious when the next one will be. I guess I suspect it might be one in Wano. I don't know. I mean, I've heard of a lot of things per cultural osmosis, but I have no idea where the next road poneglyphs are. But I'm curious. I suspect one is in Wano, but that's me just guessing. I don't actually know.
All right. Any other thoughts about this episode, Crocodile, since I know Seda hasn't seen it?
I'll probably watch it in the next hour.
The only other thing is that I thought it was interesting kind of them bring up Laugh Tale, just because I did get a chance to watch the second episode of the live action season 2 for One Piece, and they actually name drop Laugh Tale there too. So obviously that the live action has the advantage of knowing what's going on well in advance, so you can, you know, seed things into
the show.
Well,
that was in the original. That was in the manga too.
They mentioned Laugh Tale that early?
I think so. Well, actually, I think they did. Yes. I think he does say it.
Huh. I thought the Laugh Tale mention was new to the live action for being that early.
No. I think he did say it. I think I'm going to double check, but I'm pretty sure he did.
Huh. Who is this?
Yeah. I was looking it up.
I was just talking to about the One Piece live action.
Yeah, but who says it in the live action?
Crocus.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, like they actually talk about Laugh Tale in the second episode of the second season, and I didn't remember it being name dropped that early in the actual original series. Okay,
no, it did, because in this episode we just saw, Luffy mentioned it. He mentioned that, I thought. He said that old lighthouse guy was right, or something. I'd have to watch the episode again now, but I'm pretty sure Luffy just said that in this episode.
I mean, I know Luffy's aware of Laugh Tale. I don't remember him saying that. I don't remember him name-dropping Crocus in this anime episode. But again, I could just be wrong. I don't know. That's my recollection is that they dropped it. They name-dropped it earlier in the live action than ever did in anime. But I could be wrong. But I just brought it up because, oh, Laugh Tale's getting mentioned all over the place. But maybe I just need to rewatch these things, or maybe not. I don't know. But
the thing is that, and again, I've come to I've come to just accept the fact that the series is always going to say Laugh Tale, where for the longest time in the manga, they always said Raft Tale. And that was like a big surprise later that it was Laugh Tale. But I think it's because the people who are localizing the series, both the live action in the anime and everything are just saying it the way it's supposed to be said. Like, again, this was one of those weird Japanese language things where the words were written in such a way that even a Japanese person wouldn't know exactly how to pronounce it correctly. That's why they always said Raft Tail.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
It's like, well, they know what the literal name is. And yes, I just looked up chapter 105. Crocus says to the Straw Hats that Raftel is the last island of the Grand Line. So that was in the manga.
All right, fair enough.
Right. Yeah.
But I would say that about the localization, obviously that's something done for approval of Japan and Shueisha and Oda and whatnot.
I would think so.
So yeah. Even if it changed, this is clear Raftel is what it is for internationally now. But yeah. Okay. So if that was name dropped that early, I guess I misremembered. I thought that was okay. All right. Cool.
You know what? But to be fair, Crocodile, I thought the same thing until I watched this episode of the anime this week. And then I was like, oh, when Luffy said it in the anime, I guess because I was thinking like you, I thought they had like snuck it in the live action. But when he said Crocus's name in this episode, I was like, oh, I guess that really, he did say that back then.
Speaking of the live action, though, I have not watched the live action. I might marathon it at one point, but I know a handful of people who are watching it for the first time, not knowing anything about the anime. Like, they're just watching live action. They're basically the target audience a new audience for the live action. And I know at least three people who are like, God damn it, how did One Piece make me sad over a whale? So...
Yeah.
Like, again, these are not people who knew what they were in for. So
it's really good. It's one of the best like anime adaptions.
Regarding my memory, let's just be clear. Like, obviously, I think they may have mentioned it, but the stuff of Brook actually being shown and visible is the live action pulling in future knowledge, right?
Yes.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. In the manga, the pirates were named, but they were never shown. They were just shown in like silhouette, and Brook was not shown.
Right. We only get the Brook flashback later. Yes. In Thriller Bark.
Yeah. That's what we're talking about, Seda, is that one of the cool things that live action is doing is when stuff happens later in the manga that's happening at the beginning of the story, they just incorporate it.
Yeah. Like, obviously in the anime and in the manga, when they went through this lighthouse area, Brook wasn't a thing yet. But now that they know that, they can at least sort of incorporate him.
Yeah, they had a flashback. His flashback that takes place at Thriller Bark is in that second episode of season two when they go to meet Crocus for the first time. That's when that flashback happens. Not at Thriller Park, but now. And another thing they did is like in the very first episode, in the first scene, when they're executing Gold Roger, you see Mihawk is there as a child. You see Smoker there as a child. They're in the crowd. Because they always talked about having been there, but they just straight up show them.
Oh, I thought you were going to mention that other character who was in the first episode, who we knew was there based on what happened in future in the manga, but had a major role in the first episode.
I saw that they cast Bartolomeo.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, you know, he's all over the first
episode. Yeah. I meant the first episode of season one. I'm sorry. First episode of season two. Yes. Also has Bartolomeo in it. Because again, he was there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's not just a cameo. Like, he's in there for a big part of it, which is surprising to me. I thought he was going to be a cameo.
But like, yeah, it was interesting. Yeah, they really used him a lot.
Yeah, that's actually just a straight up change, but I'm sure Oda was like, yeah, that's cool. I don't know if they'll ever get to Dressrosa, but if they do, they would have to change how that whole thing goes down, but I don't think they'll even get there. Yeah. So
It ends up playing out in a way that would make sense.
Right, yeah. It's a retcon, but it ends up like flowing back. It would flow back into canon, even if they make some changes down the line, but they probably won't even get there, so it doesn't matter. But
yeah, I think in the manga, he just sees Luffy. But in this episode, this live action episode, he straight up like interacts with the Straw Hats.
Yeah, Luffy and Bart like meet each other and talk for a good bunch, which never happened in the actual manga. But
right. Yeah, watch the live action. I know you've heard me say it. It's really good. I mean, you agree, right, Crocodile? It's really good.
Yeah, the first season has been great. I've only been able to get through the second episode of second season, but it's been good so far, and I hear that the rest of the season continues on pretty well. So,
and season three is already in production. Season three. season three is already in production. That's going to be Alabasta. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Of course, the big question is how far it'll go, because obviously there's budget. Human beings do things like age. Like, you know, I don't think we'll get the whole story, but it's going to be curious to see how far we go.
Yeah. I think Inaki Godoy, or maybe it was the actor who plays Sanji, said that Oda has a vision for where he at least wants the show to reach. And it's not like he wants it to end there, but Oda has stated to them that he has a place that he definitely wants the story to at least get to in the live
action. Minimum, basically. Like, if we get there and no further, everything's fine.
Yeah. And then all the fans are now debating, okay, what is it? Is it Marineford? Is it like, you know, what? Is it Skypiea? We don't know.
Well, Skypiea and it will be pretty lame. I would hope they at least get through Annie's lobby.
Annie's Lobby is the one that everybody says too. They're like, it's got to be Annie's Lobby, right?
Yeah, but of course Netflix have a vote. So,
all right, well, that's it for One Piece. Do we want to talk about any flavor alerts?
Play flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
Anything stand out this week?
I mean, there's some lore bombs in One Piece, but I don't know if there would be like moments. They're just like, oh wow, that's pretty significant. I guess the I don't know, ending of Primal, is that a thing? Is that here comes back to life? I guess I don't know that reckoning that ending. That's a thumb thing, right? Maybe.
I don't. Is that one of your favorite moments of the year? Is what you really should be asking. I don't think so. To me, I mean, I think it's interesting. If it's one of yours, I'd be willing to hear it, but.
I don't know. I guess it's just thought to my mind, like, maybe worth thinking about.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm looking at our spreadsheet. I don't see worst moment, Brooke's Cat Viper song. Jesus.
It's so bad. It goes on for so long. Oh, my God. I was getting angry. Woody. It was like, please stop.
I'm just looking at the notes, see if anything pops out to me.
Anything comes to mind, Seda?
I'm looking.
You mentioned the quality of the animation, but that's a category we don't submit nominations for. So
everyone gets auto nominated. So
when I saw worst character, I was thinking Emma from Tokyo Revengers, but maybe I don't know how important she is at all. I don't like her.
That seems a little harsh. She hasn't really done anything terrible.
But yeah, I feel like she's there just to be a hijink, like source of hijinks.
I see what you mean. Let's see what they take her next. Maybe it'll get worse. Nothing's jumping out to me, I'm afraid.
I'm wondering, I think we mentioned this last week, but like, I think like best character male, I remember we were kind of leaning towards like, is Draken. Like, he's probably, in terms of like Tokyo Revengers characters, one of the more interesting ones, but I guess maybe we're just holding steady and see what happens. So.
Yeah. I mean, like that's exactly right. I mean, I'm okay with adding him whenever. I just feel like, I was just waiting for something amazing to happen that would like push it over the top and be like, of course we have to add him.
Yeah. It's not obvious right now, but but we were talking about this last week, how like we were just thinking like Draken is just like the muscle, like the right hand man, the muscle, you know, probably pretty straightforward. And like, no, he's actually kind of an interesting guy and actually like pretty crucial to the story and you know, he's got like a interesting personality and way he bounces off of Mikey and Takemichi. But we can hold steady.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think he's definitely the most mature character in the show. Maybe next to Hinata, but yeah. All right. Well, let's just move on then, because I just feel like we're trying to push it.
Yeah, I think we're good to call it then.
Okay. Well, so that'll do it for episode 467. Thank you for being here, Seda.
Yep.
And thank you, Crocodile.
My pleasure.
We'll be back next week for the same lineup. 108. No, I keep forgetting.
Nope.
New show next week. Amazing. Don to Don season 2. I am super looking forward to it. How could I forget?
And just to be clear, you haven't seen it. I haven't seen it, but Crocodile has.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And to be perfectly clear, they aired it and I didn't watch it.
Oh, the first episode.
Right.
Right.
So I haven't seen it at all.
Yeah,
even though I had a chance to. So, all right. So tune in next week for our first impressions of season 2 of Don to Don. And until then, later.